So are we working?
Just as we planned it out. We got you.
It's scary how this doesn't always work. But I guess you're in a temporary studio, right?
I am in a temporary studio, yep.
So, and I'm not. And the studio is being completely rebuilt. It's going to look. It's going to look like Fox Broadcasting in there. So
I think so. Yep.
Yeah, but as long as we're on the air, and that's all good. And with us, joining us over the phone, hopefully, is Jeff Mason. He is President and Chief Operating Officer at the Piston Foundation. Jeff, good morning, and hopefully you're there through space here. Jeff,
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello?
Hey, there we go.
There
we go.
Yeah.
I think we have connected to the space station and back with some technical difficulties, but you know, if it's not live radio, and you know, they moved the studio, so all kinds of different stuff going on. Anyway, Jeff Mason, President and Chief Operating Officer of the Piston Foundation. Can you tell us what the Piston Foundation is?
Sure. Piston Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we help young people become classic car technicians. And in short, we support education through scholarships, we support training through apprenticeships, and connect them with shops and jobs in the collector car industry. And this is for kids who, you know, have that love of classic cars and want to make a career out of it.
And that's one of those things. I go to cars and coffee events periodically and things like that. And one of the biggest questions that people are always trying to talk to each other about is, where do I get my classic car fixed? I can't go to the regular repair shop because when I bring in my 62 Corvair, they don't even know where the engine is, let alone be able to fix it. But the idea that this is such a good career for young people. And I mean, you watch any of the TV programs and you see some of the level of workmanship in restoration. You really do need that passion to be able to pull it off. But then you become, you become coveted by the industry at that point, right?
Yeah, you're right. They really are great career paths. The trouble is that, and I say career path, but that, right now the problem is a career path doesn't exist. And that's really what the Piston Foundation is trying to solve, meaning a young person who's interested in classic cars or collector cars of any kind, even exotics, you know, when they look forward and think, can I make a career out of this interest? You know, maybe they've got a little bit of experience and they think, well, I'm pretty good at this. How could I turn this into a career? There's a big gap right there. So they don't know how to, do it. They don't know where to go. There's no clear path for them. And that's what we're creating.
Well, that sounds, and I want to use the word delightful, and that's not the right word, but the idea that, classic cars and the history that goes with classic cars is so important. Somebody I know years ago got this weird idea, and he created a little business called the Hot Rod Handyman. And what he did is he kind of went around and went to different shows, and he wasn't trying to promote himself. He just had a couple of friends that had hot rods, but he would go and try to sort out the issues of some of the maybe DIY, poorly put together stuff or some other thing. And it became, and he was a little bit older, and it became a real business for him. And he was looking for just these kind of people. He was just looking for some young people that he could mentor and try to pull it all together and turn it into an actual business. So the idea that you guys are doing this works out really well. How do people get involved in it? How do people get involved in the apprenticeships, the different programs you have and scholarships and so forth? How do people get involved with that?
So anybody who's interested at any level can go to our website, pistonfoundation.org. And if you are a young person who is thinking about a skill trade career in classic cars and you're ready to, you're finished with high school and you want to go into an auto tech program to learn your basics, you can apply for our scholarship program. And that specifically helps young people who are in auto tech programs through which that could be a two-year community college. It could be a four-year restoration program like McPherson. But we still see that as a real essential for many young people, because so many don't grow up with a garage and a mom, a dad, a brother, an uncle who are teaching them, you know, automotive skills at a young age. Like, that used to be a very common thing. It's not so common anymore. So an auto tech program is a great place to start. And on our website, pistonfoundation.org, that's the place to do it. The other thing is, if you've got someone who's interested in learning about us, that's the place. They can subscribe to our newsletter, and they'll get information about what we're doing, as well as stories of the scholars who are helping, and you know who these kids are, where they're going, where they're studying, what's their next step in their career path.
So if it's somebody who came out of it, and they may have come out in Massachusetts here, we're very fortunate. We have a great vocational high school program. But some of the kids come out of the vocational program, and if they don't get scooped up automatically by, you know, the local dealers and repair shops in the industry, because the typical automotive industry right now is so shorthanded with people, they're looking for everybody. So your scholarships allow them to go to, you know, we're also fortunate, we have a great community college program here, either through UMass or some other ones, and they can go and take these automotive programs that may be partially sponsored by GM or Ford or whatever the case is. So it allows them to go through that. A question, where does the money come from?
Money comes from private donors. We are a public charity, and so we are not a private foundation. We are a public charity, and money for scholarships and apprenticeships and everything we do comes from private donors, car enthusiasts who donate $25, $50, $1,000. To support this idea. These are, we're a huge community of people in the United States. You know, you could easily say that it's 25 million car enthusiasts who are actively engaged in the hobby. And those are our donors, people who want to see these cars, but also see the culture around them sustained with a workforce that is, you know, growing and vibrant.
Yeah, I remember years ago I had the opportunity to kind of hang out with Terry Eric from Hemmings Motor News, and the company's changed a lot since then. But, you know, one of his things he always wanted to do was, like, bring a kid, you know, bring your kid to a car show. Let them kind of see what classic car shows were like, because he really felt that you really needed to look at past history to see where we're going to go in the industry kind of move on from there. And Hemmings now sort of does a lot of the same types of things. So some of these places where the kids maybe have shown this real interest and they want to go to work in a shop that does classic restoration, you know, whether it's Wayne Carini's F40 shop in Connecticut or someplace. How do you guys hook them up with these restoration shops?
So that is our apprenticeship program, and that is something that we just launched last year. It's in a pilot phase right now, so we're testing this to make sure this works. But someone who's interested in an apprenticeship can apply for an apprenticeship on our website, pistonfoundation.org, just like they would a scholarship. And then we go through a matching process in that we are talking to shops in the area. We understand who's looking. We get to know these young apprentice candidates, and we try to make that match.
And, you know, when this all happens and you get them so they're matched up, do you have any success stories that you can share with us?
Well, I have a lot of success stories on our scholarship program. Our apprenticeship program is literally 6 months old.
Oh, okay.
So we're still building those. But one thing to understand, the Piston Foundation is just beginning its fourth year of existence. We started in 2021 and awarded our first scholarships in 2022. We awarded our second in 2023, and so 2024 is a year where we're really launching our apprenticeship program and getting young people, qualified young technicians who want to learn the trade in a full-time job.
And the trade's really kind of interesting, too, because and she's got an awful lot of notoriety now. But Riley Schlick, who started a little home business called Riley's Rebuilds, where she rebuilds Endelbrock carburetors. She's been on our program back a couple months ago, and now she's got YouTube videos going out with the folks from Hemmings and All Girls Garage, and she really actually took kind of this old car hobby and turned it into, it was that, or she was going to work at the local supermarket, and she's like, well, let me try this instead. And her dad kind of started it, and she's rebuilding carburetors. So the idea that there's this kind of subculture of business out there of rebuilding classic cars is I think it's really exciting. And the idea that you're able to, provide some scholarship money and now get to the point where you can provide these apprenticeship programs to be able to get some of these classic cars repaired, where I'm right now in Florida. Mm-hmm. There's a really big classic car community. I didn't think it was going to be this big where I was. But one of the problems is, a lot of the folks that drive these cars used to work on them 20 mm-hmm. or 30 years ago. Now they're in their 70s and maybe even older, and they're really desperate to look for people that can fix the cars the way they used to. So the idea that, again, there's this kind of real need for this type of thing, and the idea that you're addressing it is pretty amazing. How did you come to do this? What was the catalyst that made you want to get involved?
Well, I'm a car guy from all my life. I grew up, I'm 55, so I grew up in that last generation that really kind of tinkered as kids. We had our own toolbox, we had a place to do it, and my brother and I would go around and, on junk day, get every Briggs and Stratton motor we could off the old lawnmowers and start building go-karts and mini bikes and everything like that. That was kind of our root of it. I left all of that to become to run a marketing agency where I am in Denver, and came back to cars when my brother and I started racing a vintage rally car. And it was through that I got connected to Robert Minnick, who is the founder of the Piston Foundation. And he needed some help. This was back in 2021. He needed some help just kind of shaping up the organization, and with my background in startups and marketing, it was something that I was capable of doing, so I volunteered for a little bit. But the mission really aligned with me because I'm a tech school grad too. I went to college the first time. It didn't work out for me. I stepped away. Years later, I found what I really wanted to do, which was graphic design. And I went to a tech school full-time at night for 2 years in order to get that associate's degree, and I built a 25-year career off of those 2 years of education. So when I talk to young people who are thinking about this in classic cars, I really know that the path that they're on, and I know the power of a little bit of help and a little bit of education at the front side, because for the right person who's got the grit and the drive and the interest, that's the catalyst they need. And so I love working with the kids. I love helping them along the way because it really taps into my own path. And so it aligns a lot of things for me, both my business experience, my love of classic cars, and my own personal experience with being a tech school grad.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. I didn't have the same – I went to high school. I went to college, found out college wasn't for me. Then I went to mm-hmm. a private tech school that was okay, and then started to get into the automotive industry and did that for a while, made a decent living at it, and then ended up at AAA and then somehow became a writer and broadcaster and whatever the other nonsense that I do as part of my job. And people say, well, how did you do that? And I said, really, it was because of the tech school part. And they said, "Well, you know, well, you're a writer," and I'm like, "No, I write and I talk, but I don't consider myself really a writer or a broadcaster. I just happen to do it as part of my job." I said, "But at the end of the day, I'm still fixing broken things, and the broken things are sometimes they're, you know, broken relationships that people have with their shop where they're getting things fixed, and sometimes all it takes is conversation. Sometimes it's a broken car, but sometimes it's a broken procedure that's going on. And kind of at the end of the day, I think tech school really teaches you to kind of look at what's there, analyze what's there, and then try to make it better. And I think that's really good. And it's interesting with this. Tell me a little bit about your rally car.
My rally car that I race with my brother, it is a 65 Volvo Amazon. It was built to race the Carrera Panamericana. That is a 7-day, 2,500 mile, speed performance rally from the south of Mexico to the north. It was a race started in the early 50s, was ended because of the danger of it. And then brought back in the mid 80s as a historic rally, but run in the speed format. So it pretty much runs exactly like a WRC event runs, with open road transits and closed road speed stages through the mountains of Mexico.
And the engine in your Volvo is probably not
exactly. It's historic. We have to keep the. The classes run on displacement, so it's a B20.
Okay,
it's a rally tuned B20. Our car is maintained by Vintage Racing Services in Stratford, Connecticut. Tim Ritchie is our chief mechanic, and he has helped us build this car and develop it over the years. So this year we're taking on something new. We are leaving the Volvo in the United States, and we're going to the Mille Miglia in Italy. And we're going to race a 39 Fiat 508 in that race. So rally racing is something my brother and I love to do. He's the driver, I'm the navigator, and we've kind of, you know, expanded our hobby to include a bunch of different races. We've made some films about it. It's kind of our thing that we do as brothers.
So really, you took what you do as work, what you do as a love of a hobby, and you've combined it with all of this with the Piston Foundation.
It's true, and I feel very, very lucky to do it, and it's a real honor to lead this organization and to be working out for this mission and doing something for the car community. I feel really honored to be able to do it.
It really sounds great. And if people want more information about the Piston Foundation, pretty simple. It's just pistonfoundation.org, right?
Yep. And then right on the website, there's a subscribe button. I suggest they hit that, and they'll get our quarterly newsletter, which, again, just highlights the things that we're doing. It talks about, you know, the mission and the why of all of this, but it also, we do interviews with our scholars every month, so you get to see these young people, learn about them, understand who they are. They really are remarkably dedicated, interesting, vibrant young people. That's who we're missing in the industry, you know? And there are young kids out there who really love cars as much as anybody. I always say, every American generation falls in love with cars. That's just the way it is. And our job is to figure out how to get them into these careers, because you know from your experience that these careers are great for some people. Some people are built for this, meaning they have the intellect, they have the hand skills. It's a perfect place for them to be. We want to make sure that everybody has that opportunity. I would say also your story is another example of how entrepreneurial the industry is. And I don't know a shop owner who didn't start on the workshop floor, meaning being a technician is a launching point for a bunch of different careers. within the industry and everything that's around it. And so, you know, I think people, there's been, you know, a lot of looking down on grease monkeys and blue collar work. But the truth is, it takes a great intellect and it takes great intuition, and it really takes a thinking person to do this work. And this work can lead to so many different avenues. There are possibly unlimited opportunities within the industry for someone to follow the path that's right for them and to discover new things, you know, new ways for them to have a great career. And all of that is true, but somehow all of that's gotten forgotten.
Yeah. I think with groups like you, and whether it's like Mike Rowe with his, you know, Dirty Jobs Foundation thing, you know, really brings that up. And what I like about, you know, the automotive industry is it also tends to bring groups together. Years back, I was at a kind of World of Wheels event where, you know, hot rods and classic cars. And it was kind of, it was kind of interesting because in one area, there was sort of the Z28 Camaro Firebird Trans Am group, and right opposite that was sort of the Asian hot rodders, and you could detect tension in the air because it was these older guys that, you know, had these V8 cars, and there was these younger guys that had these, you know, turbocharged Honda Civics, and you know, it almost felt like there was going to be a fight that was going to break out between the two groups. And at one point, and I'm just sort of standing there watching it all. And all of a sudden, at one point, one of the younger guys walked over to one of the Camaros and asked the guy a couple questions. And then all of a sudden, you see a couple of those guys come over and ask some questions about some of the stuff that was done on, you know, how did you get 400 horsepower out of a 2-liter four-cylinder engine? And all of a sudden, you could see, all of a sudden, they became friends. And it was pretty it was pretty amazing that kind of really what made them friends, and chances are if they were in, you know, any other situation, that wouldn't have happened. But cars brought them together. And I always look back at that and say, you know, that's one of the things that do it. And whether you go to, you know, a real high-end, you know, cars and coffee event where there's, you know, Ferraris and Lamborghinis, or whether you go to the local Volkswagen Bug event, there's this kind of natural thing that goes on where people just talk about the different stuff they have, not bragging, just they sort of, you know, here's what I have, here's what I do with it. And I think the idea that you're building that foundation that's going to keep those cars repaired and the interest up, as well as show these, you know, show people that there's money to be made, there's a living to be made, and there's more than that. There is you can make some history on your own way with it.
No doubt, and that way to connect through cars, you see that everywhere, and your story is a perfect example of that. One other, I'll put a twist to that, which is. One other thing I would ask everybody to do, if you do take your car out to Cars and Coffee or to other kind of events, and you get a kid that's interested in and looking at your car, you know, really talk to him. Invite him to sit inside. Put him in the driver's seat. I was at the Amelia Island Concours a couple weeks ago, and I had one of our Piston Scholars, a young man named Riley Soka, who is studying at McPherson College in McPherson, Kansas, in their restoration program, who is going to be one of the most sought-after kids because upholstery and trim is what he wants to do. But Riley told me the story of what got him started, and it was a local car show on the main street in his hometown, and a car owner let him sit inside a Z28 Camaro, and this is back in, you know, 82, 83. And that was it. He says, that crystallized for me this interest in cars and how cool they were and what they felt like and smelled like and sounded like. And that was it. So, you know, those are transformative experiences for young kids. So, you know, I encourage everybody to engage with the young people and the teens, you know, because you just never know what that experience will bring for them. And, you know, Riley's story is not uncommon. You know, we can all of us can remember some, you know, pivotal moment where we had an interaction with a car and a car owner who really made us feel like part of the inside, you know, deal, part of the club, gave us a clue, explained something to us. And you're like, oh, my God, that's so cool. I had no idea that carburetors work that way. Yeah, it's almost like magic. You know, it's
And before we let you go, if one of our listeners has, maybe they have a classic car sitting around, and maybe they're in a financial state that it, you know, money, they're okay financially.
Yep.
Can they donate that car to the Piston Foundation, and can that car be sold to end up as money for scholarships?
Yes, they can. In fact, we have a program we started last year called Cars for Piston Scholars, and it is a partnership with Bring a Trailer, and we take donated classic cars, and we then auction those cars, and those 100% of those auction money goes into our scholarship and apprenticeship program, and Bring a Trailer also donates the buyer's fee. And last year we raised, with Bring a Trailer, $240,000 that way. And
Amazing.
Those dollars are now going out this year in scholarships and apprenticeships. And you can start a classic car donation on the website. There's a spot for that, Cars for Piston Scholars. Or you can just contact us directly through the website to, you know, kind of talk about that process. But it provides a great tax deduction for the donor. It provides monies for young people to get started on these careers, and it also provides some benefit for the buyer of those cars. And we're keeping both the cars and the money in the car community, and it's a big virtuous circle. So it's a great way to make a big impact on some young people's lives.
Hey, Jeff, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your Sunday morning and joining us on the Car Doctor program here in Massachusetts. And I'll be in Denver in a couple weeks. Maybe I'll give you a call.
Yeah, please do. love to get together. And thanks for having me on the show. It was really great to talk with you.
All right. Take care. All right. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. You're listening on 95.9 WATD, your South Shores radio station. We will be right back.
Wouldn't you just love new kitchen cabinets without the high cost, the mess, and the inconvenience? Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting, and I know how scary the thought of a demoed kitchen for months can be. So I have a solution. Let our kitchen cabinet refinishing team restore the beauty to your kitchen cabinets. Our professionals will apply a sprayed finish that costs less and can be done in days. We paint hundreds of kitchen cabinets every year, and we would love to add yours to our list. Call Stewart Painting at either our Hingham or Hyannis office to schedule your free estimate. And we now offer financing. The process is fast and it's easy, and there is no hidden fees. Head to our website at stewartpaint.com to see if you pre-qualify. It's never been so easy to turn your vision into reality. So remember, Stewart Painting. Expect the best.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Talk radio with a South Shore point of view. Hi, I'm Kevin Tocci. Join me tomorrow for Monday Night Talk, where the South Shore comes to talk. Tomorrow night after the 6 o'clock news here on 95.9 WATD.
Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on 95.9 WATD. Jesse, I'm thinking we're working. We're on the air, right? Everything's good?
Let's hope so.
All right. Well, if you want to join us, and if you want to help us test out the phones, give us a call at 781-837-4900. And there's a, 50-50 chance it's going to work, right?
I think it's higher now. I think we got to figure it out.
You think it's 80-20? 90-10?
I'd be so bold to say 100% it's going to work.
100%. So give us a call at 781-837-4900. And I have been through this before on different radio stations where, all of a sudden you remodel something, you go to move something, and the stuff doesn't always work quite the way it's supposed to, but it sounds like Jesse's got it well under control, and rest of the folks kind of set it all up, getting it all ready to go. So I think we'll be in good shape. So
I might still have a job after all. Who knows?
Perhaps both of us. So Larry wouldn't leave us in the lurch here. So I know that Larry's going to be able to. He put it all together and make it work for us. So far, so good. So far, so good. So give us a call at 781-837-4900, and we'll talk to you about what's on your mind about cars. Maybe a little bit later, we'll talk about the latest consumer reports just came out. That's always something worth delving into and see what they have on their mind. Real interesting, they got a little bit of feedback about the Fisker. Fisker came out with a new model, and they did a road test of it, and they said it's just not ready yet. And it was quite negative about the vehicle. And I really sort of want to like the car. Fisker has two models, the Ocean and the soon-to-be-released Pear. These are all electric cars. Fisker had a supercar, I don't know, 20 years ago. I saw it at the New York Auto Show, which is, I think the press preview for the New York Auto Show is coming up. I am not attending, but it is it's coming up soon. And some things are missing. Chrysler, I was on a webinar conference call thing with the International Motor Press this past week, and there was somebody from Chrysler on it talking about a new concept car that they come up with that is going to use something called, they call it the Stella platform, which is going to have self-driving features, going to have a whole bunch of stuff. And what was sort of interesting was somebody asked, is the concept car going to be at the New York Auto Show? And they said Chrysler Corporation is not going to be at the New York Auto Show, although Camp Jeep will still be there. Camp Jeep is kind of an outdoor exhibit where you get to drive some Jeep products over a man-made off-road course. Kind of fun to do. It takes a couple minutes or so. Fun thing to do. And they didn't mention whether Ram was going to be there, which not so sure they're going to be there either. But it looks like Camp Jeep is definitely going to be there. Some of the interesting emails that came in this week, a person writes in, I own a 2019 Lincoln MKZ and retired in the summer of 2020. And my driving went from 60 miles a day down to 5 miles a week. The fall of 2020, I started getting an error message, system off to save battery. Now this happens every fall when it starts to get cold. I brought the car to the dealer 5 times and they've replaced the battery 3 times, telling me I do not drive the car enough and need to drive it at least 20 minutes once a week because of all the modules in the car. Boy, that was one long carry-on sentence that I need to work on. But that's what happens when you write Q&A columns. This year, I was charged for the battery and asked if I could buy a stronger battery. As they say, the battery life is 3 years. So apparently they had a battery. It was under warranty. They put a new battery in. And this year, they had to buy a battery. And they said the battery seems to last only a year. The dealer advised I cannot install a stronger battery because the car may not work properly. We'll get to that in a minute. I assume they only sell one type of battery. Should I wait and see if this battery that I purchased lasts through the fall? If not, do you think I can buy another battery with more power? Well, first off, adding a bigger battery to the car with more cranking amps isn't going to make the car perform poorly. 12-volt battery in a 12-volt system is going to only take as much of the 12 volts as necessary. So you could buy a battery with more cranking amps and more reserve capacity. It's not going to be a Motorcraft battery. It's going to be something else. And You know, Motocraft batteries are made by East Penn Battery, I think. And there's really only four or five battery companies in the world these days. In fact, Exide, which everybody thinks is a battery company, is really a marketing company. They buy batteries from other people. And they just have a really good, they do a really good job of putting their name on them. So the error message has to do with the start-stop system. So a lot of newer cars since 2017 or 18, when you come to a stop, the engine shuts off, and when you take your foot off the brake, it starts back up again. The system only works when the battery is fully charged. So what's happening now, the system not working, where it says system off to save battery, is because the battery isn't fully charged. So the battery has to be fully charged, and then there's certain, you know, if you're there with, you know, chances are with this Lincoln, the person who owns it probably has their seat heaters on and the heat on and all that sort of thing. So it takes more energy to run all those systems. Maybe even their headlights are on because it's darker longer and all of that. So the dealer really is correct in saying that the computer has these all these modules in it, and they, and it really needs a fully charged battery. And driving such short distances will eventually discharge the battery. There's no question. So what do you need to do? Either you need to make sure your battery is fully charged, or kind of taking what the dealer suggested, drive the car for about 30 minutes once per week. That's going to keep the battery charged. Is it going to keep it perfectly charged? No, because it's only the alternator in a car is only so capable of keeping a car battery charged. So, the ideal thing would be put this thing on a battery tender, a battery minder, a smart battery charger system. There's a bunch of them out there. We've talked to people from these companies over the years, and it's pretty easy to hook them up and disconnect them. If you have a garage, it makes it really simple. You just plug the thing into the wall. You have somebody hook up the cables to the battery, and you can have a little plug that just kind of sticks out a hole in the grill or, you know, under the hood. And you just plug it in and unplug it, and you'll always have a fully charged battery. If not, drive the car about 30 minutes once per week. Now, they go on to say they only drive about 5 miles a week. And chances are that those are all very short trips, and they're probably, maybe it's even done daily, or maybe every other day. And I don't have any scientific proof to prove this other than someone told me this once, and I believed it. Is that when you go to start your car, now whether it's a car that's fully laden with all fancy electronics in it, or an older car that takes a minute or two to crank over before it starts up, it takes about 7 miles of driving to put the amount of electricity back into the battery that you took out. So you start up the car, you crank the engine over, and you only drive 2 miles. Well, what happens when you only drive 2 miles? Well, you drive 2 miles and you've taken a little bit of life out of the battery. So then you put it back in, goes back and forth, and eventually end up with a dead battery. So drive 30 minutes. Let's see. Let's test out the phones here. Let's talk to Jim from North Reading. Jim, are you there?
I am.
Look at that. It's like magic.
Thank you, John. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well.
I'm currently working on a 05 Grand Caravan that I'm trying to change the rack on.
Okay.
And the large bolts that hold the cross frame on.
Yeah.
That I'm trying to loosen. I did actually get them off eventually, but questions about them where I tried spraying as much as I could, but I had no idea where they connected or how long they were, and used a half-inch impact, a three-quarter-inch impact, finally used a breaker bar with a long bar on it and got one side off. Thought it only had threads near the top. I couldn't believe how long it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, surprisingly how long those bolts are.
Yes, and it was all pitted at the bottom with no threads, and I thought, well, it was just going to be smooth. Finally broke the other side off. And I'm wondering, and there's supposed to be threads all the way down to the bottom that I realized, but there weren't any threads. So it just broke off on one side. Is there a way of replacing? I'm not even sure what's, and it had that big rubber bushing on it that it took us almost a half hour just to pry off on both, on each side, because they were just gunked up and really corroded. And it's am I in a place that I can't get out of now? Can you?
I don't think so. I think you're going to be able to, over with a little bit more effort, I think you're going to be able to get those bolts out of there. But it isn't going to be an easy thing, that's for sure. As you found out.
Do I have to drill it and put an easy out in, or I mean, I'm not sure how to get that other part out where it goes into the frame. There's no visual, and it was wobbly a little bit too. Like the nut that holds it permanently in place is now loose, or I'm confused.
Yeah. And you know, and one of the issues is, like you said, where that, you know, where that connects together and everything that's in there, you may find that to get that those rack attachment bolts out, you may have to drop down the subframe a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you're going to have access to the, because it's, as I recall, it almost looks like a clamp sort of arrangement on one side with two bolts on one side and one on the other, maybe?
Well, no, that's not the problem I'm having.
Oh.
where the cross member comes down.
Oh, okay.
There's one on either side, you know, just where the wheels are.
Oh, okay. So you're talking more where the subframe attaches to the body?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Those two bolts where it goes up into the frame.
Oh,
and
okay.
You can't see the top part of it at all, what it goes into.
I don't know. I would have... Yeah, because it buries itself up inside that frame section where...
It goes through like a one-inch rubber bushing.
Rubber bushing, yeah.
And then it goes through another opening, and pulling that rubber bushing down was a nightmare. I mean, I watched two videos on them where they just came out nice and clean, and mine were, you know, I used pry bars and screwdrivers and hammers and sledgehammers, and then it goes into another probably inch and a half of open space around it, so that long bolt only attaches about 2 inches at the top, and then but you can't see where it attaches.
Yeah, I would. That's something. I don't know. That's something I would have to look at and kind of figure out if there's a way around it. If there is some way you can, you know, can you drill up in there to be able to get that out? Is it something you can pry out and break off the other side? I don't know what that other end is where it screws in, because I haven't done one of these in ages. You know, they weren't as rusty back then, and you know, the bolts came out just like they were supposed to come out. So
of course, yeah.
So, I don't. You know, I hate to say I don't have a good answer, but I don't have a good answer for you. I think you're kind of on the right track where you're going to have to, you know, kind of follow it through. And You're at a point where that suspension cradle mounting bolts are, you know, where that goes up inside there, that's a reinforcement piece made into that cradle, I think. So I don't think that's a captured nut or anything. I think it's threaded right into that. But I wouldn't know what I don't know. I don't remember what it looks like. And I think you.
Okay.
I wish I had an answer, but I don't have one.
Okay. I like your feedback input, though, because I mean, it wasn't drivable with the rack leaking as it is. So if it's not drivable because I can't replace this, well, it's just either a parts car or a junkist.
Yeah, I think there is some way around it, but I don't, without looking at it, I don't know what that way is, and I don't know if you take a torch and you burn through it and try to re-thread it, whatever's on the other side of it afterwards. I'm not quite sure.
I had a friend that thought that he could possibly do that and re-weld something in there. But
yeah.
You're doing it upside down, and I definitely don't have the expertise to do it. Maybe he does.
Yeah,
he thinks he can do it.
Yeah, I mean, you can do some pretty amazing stuff with a torch sometimes, and not set the car on fire at the same time. So that that may be the answer. And you know, and those again, as you found out, those bolts are not. They're amazing how long they are, but they're not super. You know, they're probably, twice as tight as a lug nut bolt. So it's not like you should have needed, the 4-foot breaker bar on the end of there, because that was all due to rust and problems. So it needs to be solid. It needs to be tight, but it doesn't need to be. It isn't something that's got to be 500 foot-pounds. So I think it's something that is certainly workable at the end, but I think you can do it with a little bit more thought is about all I can come up with. So
I'll give it some thought. And so,
all right.
And
all right.
While you're just on your new place there, when we're on hold, we don't hear your station going on anymore.
Well, that's not surprising, I guess, because it's a new setup, and it's only temporary till they redo the studio and move back. So they're just sort of down the hall or somewhere. So
very good.
Yeah. So it'll all be back to normal in a week or two, I would think. So
great.
All right. Thanks.
Thank
Take
much.
Care. Yep. Bye bye. Let's go quickly to Mike in Hingham. Michael.
Hey, Doctor, thank you very much for taking my phone call.
Well, thanks for being there. Thanks for being there for a lot of years, by the way.
What's that?
But thanks for being there for a lot of years.
Oh, yes. I would say I followed you around most of the dial on the radio starting in Quincy and places like that.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a Sunday without church and you, I'll tell you. Reason of calling is one of our favorite subjects, electric cars. And I'm just sitting here reading the weekend Wall Street Journal and the section B1. The whole page is about the electric car revolution. And down below, they say quarterly net loss. And they've got Polestar, Fisker, VinFast, Lucid, and Rivian all losing money hand over fist. And I don't see any way these guys are going to recoup it in the near future. I don't know what your thought is.
Yeah, I kind of agree with it, because it really is, electric car sales are pretty good, but electric car sales are pretty good because the government's sort of backing them. And they're, if you can get, if you can buy a $45,000, Tesla Model 3 for $35,000 or something, it's all of a sudden it becomes a pretty good value. And the same thing, Tesla reduced some of their prices. Elon won't tell you if Tesla makes money or not. They barely tell you how many cars they sell. So it is sort of interesting how long these companies can sustain business with venture capital money keeping them going. And I guess if you look back at history, from the turn of the last century, most car companies went out of business. Most of them didn't do that well. It's not, certainly, GM and Ford and Chrysler in his day all made money, but you got to look back when Chrysler went bankrupt. Back in, when was that? The '80s.
Yeah.
So, the idea that you're taking new technology with a somewhat sketchy charging system arrangement, you can't charge everywhere, and then try to get people to go along with it. Now the EPA has changed their rules a little bit where they've sort of stepped it up, although I think what's going to happen at the end of the day is, as much as, Porsche is going to show a new all-electric Macan at the New York Auto Show, they're not going to sell many of those as it is, so they don't sell that many Macans now. So the idea that, electric vehicles, I really think that electric vehicles are going to just be another choice. I think that the future, whether it is with, and I think some of these companies, are going to get absorbed one way or the other. I mean, there was some thought at one point that Tesla was going to buy General Motors. And if Tesla, if, you know, Elon Musk has enough money to buy General Motors, and maybe he does, that would probably be a real win, because then at that point they could say, we can make all these electric cars, but if you don't want one, we can make you a gasoline car, we can make you a plug-in hybrid car, we can make you a hybrid car, we can make anything you want. And that's where the real choice is. And I think the idea of, you know, VinFast, which is an interesting company from Vietnam, and they have some interesting products, yeah, they're not making money. You know, like you pointed out, Lucid's not making money. Lucid makes two, now going on three vehicles. The Lucid, they make one going on two vehicles. Rivian makes two going on three vehicles. And again, those vehicles aren't doing well. Lucid, that I really like their car. The Lucid Air is a phenomenal car. 500 miles of range, stupidly fast, well done inside. But, you know, there's a hint out there they're going bankrupt in the next month or so. So, you never know.
Yeah. Two quick comments. One is that you and I talked about this several years ago. 2025, I'll buy a plug-in hybrid from a Toyota make, either Lexus or one of those. That's the way they go, absolutely, in my mind. And number two is, I hope, probably VinFast is probably using some of the metal I left over there when I left there in 1970, you know?
Well, that is entirely possible. You never know. So, the idea that, you know, there are these electric car companies, and you know, I read some headline the other day that all the domestic car manufacturers are going to go out of business because of all the electric cars coming from China. Well, first off, show me an electric car that's coming from China. There isn't any. So, you know, the headlines tell one story. Who knows? You know, who knows where it's all going to go? But I think you're right. I think in the next, you know, my next car, and I need to think about a car at some point, my next car, it may be the same thing. It may be a plug-in hybrid where I can plug it into 110 volts. I can drive 20, 30 miles per day only on electricity. Or it may just be a conventional hybrid and, you know, get the little bit better fuel economy and kind of go from there. But I think we're very fortunate that we're in a time of choice where you can do a lot of things. But the idea that I wouldn't invest heavily in Rivian or Lucid or VinFast right now. Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Why don't we take that last break? My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. You're listening to 95.9 WATD. We'll be right back.
AAA is with you at every moment in your life. They have 24-hour, 7 roadside assistance, which covers you in any car you're driving or riding in, even a rental or your friend's wheels. They have great member rates on home and auto insurance, savings on travel, hotels, and rental cars, and discounts on hundreds of your favorite brands. You're covered on and off the road. Learn more at aaa.com/join.
Stop painting and renovating.
Are you tired of endlessly searching for a reliable painting company? Then look no further than One Stop Painting. Hi, this is Jeff Cohen, owner of One Stop Painting. My local family company has been here for nearly 4 decades, keeping homes and businesses beautiful and protected from the harsh New England climate. We can handle any interior or exterior painting project, regardless of the size or complexity. But that's not all. We also offer soft washing and restoration services to give your home a fresh, revived look. From repairing basic wood rot to replacing doors, windows, and siding, our full-service carpentry teams can fix and repair any issues. At One Stop Painting, we never subcontract our work. That means you'll receive the highest quality service from our Better Business Bureau accredited company. Don't settle for mediocre service. Your home deserves the best. One Stop Painting is here to deliver. Call us today at 508-888-3500 or visit us online at onestoppainting.com to schedule your painting project today. Again, that's 508-888-3500.
One Stop Painting and Renovating.
This is Dan Cloutier.
And this is Kim Jennings.
We're from Birch Bear Records. Tune into Twilight Showcase Radio,
hosted by Sandy Stride and Keith James,
on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Search for Twilight Showcase on Facebook and visit twilightshowcase.org.
Twilight Showcase, tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Make an appointment Sunday morning at 11 for John Paul, the Car Doctor, on 95.9 WATD. Now, back to the Car Doctor.
program. Back to Jim in North Reading for a minute. I was doing a little tinkering around on the internet. Yeah, that bolt's only like 120 foot-pounds. Some people have suggested the only way to get that broken piece out is to weld another nut. So kind of build up with weld to the broken part, weld another nut on there, try to rattle it loose with an impact gun. Other people say that that support that that subframe mounts into is actually removable, and you can order a new one so you can get more of the same pieces and have somebody weld that in. The idea that you can fill it with weld and weld a nut onto that might be a pretty good alternative, and maybe you can heat it and cool it and heat it and cool it a little bit. And the heating of welding it may, once the weld cools off, may just be enough to break it free, but you're going to need somebody with a welder to do that. Real quick, I think we only have a minute left here. Let's see if we can talk to Steve in Braintree real quick. We only have about a minute, Steve.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a 2000 Tundra I'm trying to replace. And Toyota only has V6s with turbos. I'm looking for an 8.
Yeah.
I plan on towing a boat. So am I going to have, is that going to have enough power to tow a boat?
Oh, I think it's going to have more than enough power. I think you're going to find that that engine has more power than the V8 did. So
really?
I think you're going to be fine, because that's a twin. I think that's a twin turbo. I think you're going to find that.
Okay.
I think that's like 350 horsepower. So I think you're going to be fine.
Okay.
All right.
All I need is the money.
Yeah, that's all you need. Hey, we got to get going. We're out of time, but thanks for calling in.
All right,
until next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car, and if you see an emergency vehicle by the side of the road, slow down or move over. It saves lives. Talk to y'all next week. Bye-bye.